welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How are you doing, Jermaine?
Good, Sean. How are we today?
Very good. Enjoying our running in the rain. It's not very nice weather over here in Amsterdam, unfortunately. We like talking about the weather at the beginning of every show. I don't know why. We're British, I guess.
How's things? It's Baltic here right now.
Oh, are you managing to get out for a run in London?
Please, everyone's wrapped up like Eskimos. No one's running.
Wasn't it Daley Thompson's thing of like, this is Christmas Day, so it's probably a bit early for me to say this, but he loved it when it was Christmas Day because he could go out and train twice because he knew his rivals wouldn't be able to get out more than once.
Yeah.
So you should be feeling this Baltic conditions and thinking, right, I've got to get out there. My rivals can't manage it. I'm going to manage it. Anyway.
No. I'm tropical. It don't work like that.
Yeah. How's things been? Have you been busy?
Yeah, on the buses. Yeah. So, telling you another story. I'm coming in to the bus stop at Peckham High Street. It's packed. And open the doors, people are getting off, people are getting on. But there's still loads of people on the pavement. So, but no one's getting on my bus. So obviously the doors are open, but people are just standing still on the pavement. So I close the back doors. Obviously everyone's still. And as I close to the front doors, this guy standing in the bus decides to get on the bus. But he's getting on the bus without looking or getting on.
Yeah.
And most people lead with their leg. He led with his head. And I couldn't press the button to open it again. So basically, he got his head caught in it. But when his head got caught in it, it made his cheeks puff out. So he looked like a blowfish. And then I had to open the doors back. And he was mad. And then all the people sitting at the front were cracking up. And I was trying my hardest not to laugh, because I was thinking, oh, I don't want to get in trouble. But I was like, I'm sorry, but I said, you didn't want the bus, you're standing there, and then you got on the bus without even looking and getting on the bus. And then he was just like, Buzzy's Oyster got on the bus. I was like, oh, my bad.
How did that football game go as well? Did you win that?
Oh, boy. So, get there. It's like pitches all bobbly. You've got all these drivers with their belly hanging out the bottom of a football shirt. It was really funny. So it's the old boys versus the young guys. The first 2 minutes, one of the drivers broke his ankle. And then, like, we had hamstring pulls. People were falling. It was like a battlefield. People were falling over, wounded. So I only played half the match, and then I had to go back to work. And I scored 2 goals, and we were winning 4-0 in the first half. Then I left. So, and then later on, I found out the score was 5-4. I was at 5-4. So, yeah, obviously, they came back and they won.
Oh, Jesus. That was you leaving,
didn't you? Bloody hell. That was me running everywhere.
Yeah, the only person that could run on the entire field, probably.
Nice. What about you? What have you been up to?
Good, my running's going all right. Slowly coming back together, which is nice. I'm trying to think if I've shut any people's head in doors, and I think in the last couple of weeks.
Mark Smalley, see what she said. If she looks different.
Yeah. But no, nothing too exciting. But
Today's topic.
Yeah, so today's topic is a funny one. We're going to be talking about, like, if you could change anything about your past, if you could change anything about in your running career so far, what would it be? We've got a really interesting interview on later on today, which is with Bobby Clay, and she's a phenomenally talented UK runner. She's won a number of titles internationally and nationally. She's still only 20 years old, but she's recently come up with produced an article to tell her story about how she suffered recently from osteoporosis, which is a result of underfueling, overtraining, and leading to a lack of menstrual cycle, and she's gonna talk to us about how it's happened and her regrets. And we thought it'd be interesting for us to do the same thing, to talk about regrets about our running kit. So what do you think? What would you change if you're looking back at your career? What would you change if you could?
Obviously, my personal view would probably be, you know, when you got an injury or a niggle, I still ran until it was like so bad I couldn't run.
Yeah.
Where you think, in hindsight now, I should have rested a couple more days and then I would have been fine for weeks or months. Obviously, when you're young, it's easy when people say don't do it. You just, because you're so hungry, or want to be successful, you just don't listen.
Yeah.
Like, what would you, what's your one?
I'd agree with that. It's always like, I always think I could have listened at certain times in my career to advice from people, and I didn't. But like, sort of my main regret, if I look back on my career, is to, if you're running well and if things are going well, take advantage of it. Like, I had one really good year in my running career back in, I think, 2013, 2014, when I run really well. I ran for England a couple of times, and I didn't take advantage. So my one biggest regret is I run well at the National, and I was running really well, and then I had, it was the Intercounties in a couple of weeks, and I didn't think about it. I just went out and just did my normal thing, worked too hard because I was doing personal training back then. Got knackered, came to the Intercounties, I was ill, and I didn't run very well, and it was probably the only opportunity I'd ever get to have had a chance to run for Britain. There was a World Cross Country that year, and I might have made the team, might not have done, but I regret not giving it the attention it deserved at that particular point in time. If you're good, if you're running well, race. Do you know what I mean? Take the opportunity to take advantage.
Because when you're running well, like a purple patch could last two to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
When you're having like an amazing purple patch.
Yeah.
But like, I've had like my coach say to me, like, what I should have changed is like, you got athletes that love running and want to be a really good runner, but also want to be really sociable.
Yeah.
Do party stuff. And
yeah.
So I remember days I've had amazing sessions and then I go out clubbing that night.
Yeah. But do you actually regret that though? Do you regret having a varied?
I like, think in hindsight, he's like, you probably would have been a better runner for it.
Yeah. So obviously Bobby has like a really interesting story she can talk to us about, and she's going to come up and talk us through it now. Here she goes. So on today's show we have young British athlete, Bobby Clay. Hey, Bobby, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Fantastic. Now, as a junior athlete, you've had phenomenal success. A number of sort of major accolades. You were fourth at the World Youth Games over 1,500 metres. You're also the European Junior Champion of 1,500 metres. And you've won numerous UK titles on the cross-country circuit and also on the track. Pretty fantastic start to your career, really. How did you, looking back, when did you first start running and what was the trigger for you to start sort of getting into it?
Well, my mum has always ran. So even when I was really, really little, she'd be going out for runs. And I kind of, she's going to love me saying this, but I kind of at that point in my life, and still now, idolised her. Sort of, she was everything I wanted to be, and a part of her life was running, and that was something that I wanted to be a part of my life. So initially she would go for a run and I had my little Cindy bike, which I absolutely loved, and I'd bike next to her. And probably the first three times I'd pleaded and pleaded and pleaded for her to let me run next to her. And she'd said, no, you're too young. And then I must have got to the age of about 7 years old.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, okay, you can run next to me. And I think she could tell from the start when I insisted I had to do a sprint finish at the end of every run that she realised, okay, she's got the running bug already.
Yeah.
And I joined my athletics club at the age of seven, right, and got put straight into the multi-events group because that's where all the seven-year-olds went, other than me, who decided after about 3 weeks, I didn't want to throw, I didn't want to jump, I just wanted to run, and insisted that I need to go up to the distance group.
Yeah.
Was
it always distance then, never sprint?
To be honest, I loved sprinting, and I still do now, because I could always beat my sister. sprint. So, and I loved the thought of going fast, but it became quite clear straight away that endurance was something that I had, and I loved being good, so obviously I did stuff that I was good at.
Did your mum ever run with you in the pushchair? Was she one of those mums?
No, so she'd leave me at home. Not on my own. I was super. But no, she didn't run through pregnancy, but she was very quick to get back running. For her, she got to county standard, but she never prioritized running as her only thing. Even okay. from a young age, she had, well, we've always had horses, so I was encouraged very much to ride as well. So,
in terms of, obviously, you were quickly obsessed with the running. Does that a reflection of your personality? Are you do you like to learn? Are you a person that's kind of very ambitious in other areas of your life?
I'd say so. I think, as strange as it sounds, I like to put my body through pain. Hmm. And it's something that I've always enjoyed. I like the thought of someone telling me I can't do something and then being able to do it. I've always wanted to be able to push myself further than what I think other people think I can do, which has probably been half my problem. But yeah. I suppose it is reflected in other areas that I've always, always, always ridden. And I've always had ponies and horses, which when they've come to me, they haven't been the best, but I've always been determined to make sure that they're one of the best ponies within our pony club and things like that. And yeah, I just think if I'm going to do something, I have to do it properly.
Okay. At a young age, did people earmark you as a great talent? Did people sort of look at you and think, and she's going to kind of push on and become a top runner?
So my first coach, he was brilliant with me. He was quick to realise that I was very determined and I wanted to push on and I wanted to do more. And he was very quick to realise that I could definitely be something.
Yeah.
But he recognised that I also need to be controlled. And
so you're one of those crazy ponies in your own club.
Yeah. But no, he definitely recognised it. My parents were just thrilled that I loved something so much, and they would have supported me whether I was hoping to be in the next Olympics or coming last in the egg and spoon race. So for them, it wouldn't have mattered either way.
Yeah, because obviously when you're 8 and 9, you just want to beat your sister, like you say, or you just want to beat the next person in the class. Was there a point, you know, maybe perhaps in your teenage years, I don't know, where you start to think, actually, I can not only beat everyone around me, I can be the best in the UK or the best in Britain. Was there a point that clicked for you?
It must have been the run-up to English Schools Cross. I must have been under 15, and I got told if I came in the top 8, I'd get an England vest, and that's something I'd never considered at all, because I'd only really thought about I wanted to be in the top of my county. And once that was said to me, I suddenly thought to myself, you can do that. And that's probably when I started to really work hard and realise that that's what I want to do with my life. I want to run.
Yeah.
And it was when I got that England vest. So I ran and I came fourth. And I can remember crossing the line and just thinking, I've done it. And I thought I was excited. And then my mum was absolutely screaming. I then found out later on that day that she had seen me cross the line and passed out. And my dad was like, great, well, I want to go give Bobby a cuddle, but I'm having to carry my wife around. So I can remember him saying to me, you know what, we're not going to take your mother again. So, yeah, but that was a point for me where I thought, okay, well, I was absolutely buzzing. I got my England vest. I'm going to go to an international. And I thought, yeah, but you came fourth.
Right, yeah.
That's not first.
Yeah.
And that was a big turning point for me.
Yeah. And does that continue? So now you've won lots of UK titles. Upon crossing the line, how do you feel about that, winning that race?
Initially, I'm always thankful for a win. Because it's not just me. I've got obviously my whole team behind me, and I'm just thankful for what they've done for me to get me there and get me in the shape that I need to be in. And at the end of the day, a win is a win, or even if it's not a win, a PB is a PB. And I think you need to sort of respect that and respect your body for doing that for you. And I've always been like that. So even though I have neglected my body and I have punished my body, I've always had a level of respect for my body. I've before spoken to my legs and said to them, I said to them, because I knew that I was coming to the end of the track season. It was World Juniors, my first World Juniors. So it must have been 2012. And I said to them before the final, I spoke, I'm going to sound crazy, I spoke to my legs. I was like, I promise you, I promise, this is the last thing you got to do this season. Just take me through. So I did have respect. I do have respect for my body and what it can do for me. But
You're the leg whisperer.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to talk to Sean because he needs some of that talking.
I need some whole body whispering and mind whispering.
Oh, God.
But anyway.
Obviously didn't whisper to the rest of my body enough. I'm normally thankful and happy. And when I finish a race, it's normally the next few days afterwards that I always start to replay it in my mind. And I think if you'd done this, you'd have run a bit quicker. If you'd done that, you could have... I don't know. I think that's the trait of every athlete.
Yeah. So going back to, like, obviously you talk to your legs, do you treat them after they've done you something good? So, like, you win a race, do you treat them?
What's like a massage or something?
Or rub some ice cream with them, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I have a bath in chocolate. I probably was a liar to my legs because I said they'd have a break and then... I had a little bit of a holiday and then went to Watford and 3 weeks in a row, so I lied. But I always knew that I needed to respect my body, but my perception of what was respecting it and what isn't must have been altered along the way somewhere.
So in the article in Athletics Weekly, which we'll put a link to on our show notes, you said you were running with on doing grass reps and with your current coach, and you just wanted more and more, and you moved on to you sensed an opportunity to join the Great Britain squad. Was that right?
Well, I initially was doing, I was completely grass based, and that was my first coach who I'd had since I was 7, and I stuck with him all the way up until must have been 15.
Who is this? Should we pick him up?
James Roberts, absolute hero, brilliant. Anyone who wants to get into grassroots running, who wants their children to love running, I've never met someone with a passion for running as much as James, and we're still in contact now, and he's fantastic. He's absolutely amazing. So excited to see him over Christmas for a Christmas dinner. But yeah, so I was with him for a very long time, and he'd completely developed my passion for running. He'd always mark out a course with posts, and they put me a couple of posts in front of often the under 17 boys and the senior boys, and I was obviously really young, and he'd set me off, and this is always at the end of training, just something fun to do, and he'd set me off, and then they had to try and catch me. So I think he's the reason I front run, I reckon, because I always used to be
keep
chased,
away from the boys.
But yeah, I moved from him to, it's all within the same club, but the track based group, and change coaches, because at that point in time I felt like I needed to get on the track, because it got to a point in my life where everyone else was talking about track splits and what they was going to do with their first 400 in. I remember standing on the start line thinking, I have no idea what you're talking about. Absolutely no clue. I just thought, we're running 800 metres. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
All we got to do is just run as fast as we can for 800 metres. Like, I've always tried to keep it simple, but then something in me decided that I needed to change and I needed to know these splits. And I then went too much the other way and did every single session on the track with the track group. And that's where I feel there was a turning point of where my body started to get abused by me, because I didn't give it the rest or the recovery that it needed, and I was doing sessions which were designed for senior men, but I was a 15-year-old girl, and I didn't realise at the time that that was not what I should be doing, because my body didn't, as I said, my body didn't give me the indication. I was hitting target times, I was exceeding target times, and if why not push on if you're getting quicker? Push on and get quicker. Mm-hmm. And that was my answer to it all, and I should have done more grass training. I was meant to be growing.
Not to criticise the coach at the time, but sometimes when the coach has an athlete that's really keen and really good, sometimes their job is to hold them back. Do you think that people weren't strict enough around you when you were younger?
I think I was a difficult athlete. I hope not personality-wise, but when I was training... I would often do what I thought was right. So my coach would see me 3 times a week if I was doing 3 track sessions, which was Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And I know a lot of people wouldn't agree with doing the Saturday session on the track or doing 3 sessions a week. I mean, I got to university and that would change, but he didn't necessarily see what I was doing between track sessions either. So in a way, yeah, I shouldn't have been doing those 3 track sessions a week. I should have been on the grass at some points to give my body a bit more of a break from obviously how hard an impact the track is. And the 3rd session probably wasn't necessary.
So you was just sneaking extra training?
Well, I was doing, between sessions, my runs were very long. So it wasn't necessarily sneaking extra training, it was just extending the training maybe I was given. Can't put blame on anyone else other than myself.
Was it pretty consuming? Because obviously you were still getting better, as you say, and you were still achieving. Was it like affecting other areas of your life? How were you doing, like in school and things, and how did it affect your relationships? Did it totally dominate everything?
Yes, to a point. I wasn't very sociable. Not because I'm not a sociable person. I absolutely love people, but because I knew I had training after school. So I wasn't, rightly so, I wasn't allowed to double run. And that was something my dad would never have allowed. Absolutely no way was I double running. He said, if you're double running, you need to be resting and recovering between, and school isn't that, and you're too young. So I knew if I wanted to go to training in the evening, I loved my school, but it was a grammar school and it was respected and the workload was a lot. And I knew if I wanted to go to training in the evening, my parents would make sure that, would always say I had to do my homework first. So I'd be in the library doing my homework at break time and lunchtime while attempting to eat lunch, doing homework.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just so thankful for the group of friends I had, because I probably wasn't the best friend possible, but they were unbelievably supportive.
Yeah.
And they still are. I'm in contact with them all still now. I think they could see that I was being consumed by a sport, but they just respected the fact that I loved it so much. And they say that they love me, so I feel like they were just very tolerant of me.
But a simple question, and don't worry if you don't want to answer. Do you think you were happy then? Did it bring you happiness, kind of this insatiable desire to get better as a runner?
I feel that's a harder question to answer than I thought it would be. When my legs are moving and I'm running, there is no happier feeling. So if my legs are absolutely burning and I'm doing 400 meter reps, I am absolutely buzzing. Like, that is fabulous for me. Mm. But surrounding that, I did know that I wasn't living a normal life, but I didn't want to live a normal life. So I would say I was happy. Yeah, I would definitely say I was happy. And my home life is absolutely fantastic. So I may not have been socialising a lot with other people, but I was definitely happy, but I was definitely completely consumed by athletics.
Yeah. And also in the article, you say you still don't think you have an eating disorder, but you talked about how you were with a group of female athletes that where eating became the enemy. What do you mean, like, specifically by that?
So, eating disorders and mental hang-ups with food were prominent in my training group when I moved over to the track group. And I feel like an eating disorder, we all know, is a mental disorder. And I never, ever had any hang-ups with food at all. But I had experience within my household of an eating disorder. So I think my whole perception of what was eating a lot and feeling a lot was comparing it to someone who unfortunately was being absolutely tortured by her own brain. Whatever people think about it.
What food was a no-no?
For me?
Yeah. You wanted it, but you refused to have it.
I was never like that. I never refused to have anything, but I just ate very healthily and my perception of amounts was completely warped because I was with someone who was eating nothing. I very much got fueling after training wrong, because I used to swim a bit before school, because for a long period of time I was doing tetrathlon, so I needed to swim, and I'd have morning swim sessions, and I used to get a lift from the pool from a friend, because my mum used to have to go back and do the animals. I wouldn't eat much at all after a 2-hour swim and then have a day at school, but I didn't see that as, I didn't not eat because I was thinking I've got to be thinner, I've got to be lighter, or I shouldn't eat. I would just be whatever I'd remembered to pack that day. So I was trying to live as a professional athlete, but not preparing each day for the training of a professional athlete.
Yeah.
Because I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
So for me, it was just, have you got your books? Have you had your homework diary signed because you don't want a detention?
Yeah.
And have you got your swim stuff? And that was my packing for school. And I'll throw in whatever it was for lunch.
Yeah.
But whereas, like, that's not how you recover. And I just didn't think about it, really.
No. And obviously, in the article, you mentioned how it affected, obviously, your menstrual cycle, and you weren't able to have a normal period. And you also mentioned it didn't seem to bother you at the time. Do you think it's a kind of quite common thing amongst younger athletes?
It's too common. So I've spoken to people about it recently who also have, a lot of my friends and a lot of people I've trained with in the past don't have periods, and they've lost their periods, or they haven't had a period for 2 years or something. And for me, when I take myself back, and I didn't want to go to the doctors, I didn't want to have periods because I've been told, well, you need to be a certain body fat to have a period. And I thought, well, I don't want to have that much body fat.
Yeah.
So for me, if I had had a period, I would have been devastated. And that's just so wrong. And my whole, like, my whole mentality around it was wrong. And I mean, you learn about it at school, you learn about it in biology, that's what a female's meant to do. And I was so happy not. I got to 17. Well, I got to 16. My parents are like, right, we're taking you to the doctors. I was fuming. Wow. I refused to go. Absolutely no way. I'm not getting put on some pill and having to have periods. I'm not putting on this. I'm not doing that. And they were like, you're a child and we're the adults and you're doing what you're told. And they were so firm with me. And then when the doctor said, she's all good to go, look at her. She's not even 5 foot. She's got no boobs. She's just underdeveloped. Like, I was buzzing.
Really?
I was like, see, mum, dad, and I was all cocky. I'm fine, told you so. Got to 17, exact same thing happened again. Got to university, changed coaches. British Athletics have been amazing to me since got to Loughborough, and they were like, no. What do you think you're doing? And still, I was 18 years old, and I was still quite happy cruising along as a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And it's just, it took a lot for me to realise that it's not right.
So how old were you when you got your first GB vest?
15.
So do you think that maybe GB should screen more younger athletes to see if they've got problems when they're that age?
And there definitely is potential, but then again, like, I can see why there'll be problems, because 15... like, some people don't even do sport, they wouldn't have had a period or anything like that. So it's difficult, and I think it's difficult for, obviously you need it for health, but for privacy, 15 years old, like, they're just buzzing about their GB vest, and it might be the only one they ever get. I don't know, it's difficult. It is a difficult one, because things need to be flagged up earlier. And I was so lucky. I got on the Futures program, I think, when I was 16 or 17. And they flagged me up as a problem. And they gave me a lot of nutritional support and things like that. But when you're consumed by the sport, I was happy to listen to what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And there's only so much someone can help. an athlete when they're doing that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think sort of top female athletes, I'm not going to say they have a responsibility to say it because that's not fair, like, to say that, but do you think if more role models in the sport had been more open about this sort of thing and their own processes, perhaps it might have changed your approach?
Yeah, I feel like it's difficult, isn't it? Because it's not just something you say, I don't know, when you're passing, like, you're calling down and the seniors are calling down and, like, you have a chat. It's not really something that people talk about, and I feel like it does need to be spoken about more. I'm really lucky because someone like Amelia, to me, has always been really open and has always spoken to me about anything I want to talk about. But then it takes the younger athlete to actually speak about it.
Mm.
And I think when you're at that age, something like a period or something like that, you're embarrassed, or I don't know. So I think the more, yeah, I do agree, the more the older athletes and the role models talk about it, the more confident the younger ones will be to ask about it. But yeah,
difficult.
I think for me, I just, as I said, I just thought it would never happen to me.
Mm.
So even though I knew, I was showing all the signs that I didn't have periods, I was very, very lean, I was doing a lot of training, but I still didn't think it would happen to me. And I think that's the mindset that needs to change. Mm. Like, you get told about the female athlete triad, you go to mini marathon camp, and they tell you all about the female athlete triad, and someone in a white coat talks to you about this science, and I'm too busy doodling next to whoever I'm sat next to, or we're writing notes to each other, because all we're thinking about and all we're caring about is the track session we're going to do in the afternoon and who's going to play manhunt. So the lectures aren't something that you really listen to. And even if you listen, it doesn't matter because it's not going to happen to you. So why listen when all the other girls are doing it? And it's that mindset that needs to change, because I've learned that it does happen to you. And if it doesn't happen to you now, it's going to catch up with you later.
Mm. Because it did, obviously, it did catch up with you at university. You've now been through a year, or longer, is it? You've been through a year of various stress fractures and problems through osteoporosis. Is that right?
Yeah. And the worst thing about it is I got to university and my training was probably reduced by about 50%.
Mm.
And I was around athletes who, like, my training group, as soon as I moved to university, and I moved to Rob, and he realised straight away I am absolutely crazy.
Who's Rob Denmark, was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
He put me on a leash immediately, realised I was crazy. I was in a group of girls who are absolutely fantastic. They're flying now. They deserve to be flying. And they just showed me that. It was just sort of like, to me, asking me about what I was doing. They're like, why are you doing double the amount that we're doing?
Mm.
And I suddenly thought, why am I?
Mm.
And there was just, I just was around these girls who were my idols, and I was just thinking, what am I doing? And I had my first year at university, and I suddenly had a life, and running was still my life, but I could go out for coffee and see the other girls, and just, I had a life. And that's when everything changed in my training. I wasn't doing junk miles. I was making things count. Mm. And I was training really hard. Mm. But I was so much stronger. And I just wish that came earlier, because I had a great summer, but it was just all too late.
It just shows, doesn't it, training smart is difficult. It's not an easy thing to get right. It's so hard to find the right kind of level for you, really.
Yeah, and it is for the person, and it is individual. And I got a lot of individual attention when I moved up here. And I think it takes quite a mature mindset to realise training smart is successful. Doing as much as physically possible isn't.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a big... I always make the joke to my mum that maybe I just matured very, very late. She was like, yeah, I think you did.
Yeah.
And did, I think, like, she wonders whether I've still matured yet. But.
Well, when can we expect you to, like, a return to running? Are you close to making a comeback?
Well, at the moment, I'm currently trying to make the transition into being a mermaid. so, not quite yet. But I have a bone scan in December, and for me, I need to stop putting so much pressure on this scan. Mm. So I've been told, if my bone scan, so this is a Dexter on my spine, if that's improved, we can start considering really, really slowly rehabbing back into running. Right. So at the moment, I've managed to rehab my body enough to be able to do walking drills, which means there's a bit of work outside the pool, which is great. And I've never in my life, I mean, I hate walking drills. They are so boring.
Mm.
And I got the message from Rob saying walking drills next week. And I actually think I was going to cry. I was so happy. I sent a million emojis back and he replied with, wow, okay, you are excited.
Obviously, you've been doing aqua jogging.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. And then have you been doing the G runner? You know, like the gravity machine?
So I was on the altitude treadmill and I got up to quite a lot on that and we was going to transition to grass and I managed to get a stress fracture in my shin on the altitude, which was unbelievable. I then managed to get a stress fracture, which we assumed was from the bike. So I'm not even on the bike.
Is that in the pelvic area? Have you got it on the bike?
No, in my shin. My shins are just awful. And we're pretty sure it's just that my body got to this point where it just couldn't cope and it was just breaking down. And my shins are just very weak. And I've purely been swimming, aqua jogging, and rehabbing in the gym, which takes ages. But so you can imagine how happy I was when I got told I could do walking drills.
Yeah. But you said you broke your foot swimming as well. Did you do like kicking it off the wall or did you trip up?
I pushed off the wall and felt this absolute crunch in my foot. And I was swimming with my sister and she absolutely kicks my butt in the pool anyway. So I pushed off the wall and then thought, oh God, that really hurt, and felt a crunch. So then just dragged my way through the water with my arms, got to the other end, and we was doing hundreds. We was doing like 10 by 100 or something. And we were like over halfway through. And I said to her, I was like, Alex, I think I broke my foot, and laughed afterwards. And she turned around to me and was like, you got 10 seconds, now crack on.
Yeah.
She obviously didn't realise that I had as well. And I just finished the swim set thinking, God. I was thinking, this is really, really, like, I can't feel it. It's really sore. Hopped out of the pool, like, attempted to walk and thought, oh, this is sore. But it was on my end of season break. So I text Rob saying, my foot's sore, but it's fine. I've got a bruise. And he was like, well, if it's only a bruise, you're allowed to do a couple of easy runs next week. We're going to gradually get back ready for winter. Because it was right at the end of my end of season break. And I was like, yeah, it's a bruise. So I went for a run on it and it was, I don't know why I carried on. It was awful. I could only run in a straight line. I couldn't turn any corners.
Wow.
So I went from Loughborough University and it was pretty much a straight line to a village outside in Corn. And I just ran for the amount of time I was told to run in a straight line and rang my sister. I was like, I'm in Corn. You need to pick me up. And she was like, what? Why? Why did you run in a straight line? I was like, I'll explain when you pick me up. So she drove out, picked me up, found me sat on the pavement crying.
That's quality.
Like, why did you carry on running? I was like, because I had half an hour to do. She was like, what is wrong with you? And then I got a scan, found out I broke my foot in one place and had two stress fractures in another place.
Jeez, so, just in the pool.
That was when I got sent for a scan, and then because obviously I broke it in the pool, and the physio was like, no one breaks their foot in the pool, there's something else going on, and that's when I found out, and it all suddenly started to make a bit more sense. But Yeah, absolutely crazy. Why I just carried on running in one direction.
If you're lucky, when a Sunday run, you can end up even further.
Yeah, imagine if it was a Sunday run, managed to get to Nottingham or something. Like, I had to run in a straight line.
Okay, so Bobby, we have three questions we're asking all of our interviewees on the show. And the first question is, if you could only wear one make and model of running shoe for the rest of your career, what would that be?
Absolutely beautiful. But me with my special feet, I have to wear structures. So it's going to have to be structures. And I'm devastated about that. As beautiful as they are, they're just not pegs.
And the second question is, if you can recommend anything other than looking after yourself, obviously, but if you can recommend like a book, podcast, virtually anything to our listeners, what would you recommend?
I don't know.
I suppose you spend most of your time with the horses and the and your run. There's not much there to fit in.
This is what I recommend. Get yourself two goats. Absolutely. I got them when I was 15, so I'd been begging for the goats for as long as I can remember.
Do you say get yourself two goats? Like specifically two?
You've got to have two. They've got to be two boys. I mean, I have got two girls, but don't tell them. But the boys are so much more fun. They are amazing. They've saved my life. Number one, they're good looking. Number two, you can take them on walks and they're really fun. And number three, unlike men, they don't chat back at you. So I can say what I want and they listen.
They just chew stuff.
Yeah, they just chew. They give you the odd burp in your face because I don't know why they do that, but they always burp in my face. But you get used to it.
And don't take them to Ethiopia. They're eating.
That is true. If anyone sees a lady with two goats wandering around the Loughborough area, they know who you are then.
Yeah, well, I'm not allowed them up at university, which is devastating. But I have tried to FaceTime them. I couldn't find them. I needed to FaceTime them. They're really, really proud of their horns. And my mum, they just don't like their horns being touched. You just don't do it. My mum accidentally skimmed one of their horns with the iPad.
Oh, really?
And all I saw was this goat absolutely nail the iPad with his head.
Really?
And then the screen went black. And my mum's never, ever tried again since. And I blamed her and I was like, Mum, it's because you touched his horns. I saw you touch his horns. She's like, no, it's not. Not in that voice. She's never, ever tried again.
We'll tell your mum.
She's not going to use that voice.
She sounds like a wicked witch. We love your mum.
She's never ever used that.
And my final question is, in your opinion, what's been the greatest endurance performance of all time?
Oh God. Paula Radcliffe's marathon record. It makes me feel sick thinking about it.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. I think, like, that's been the most chosen one. Yeah. I think it's...
That's most... Yeah, that's popular. Last three interviews, they love that one.
Yeah, I hate...
Yeah, it's just because you look at the splits and I'm just sat there thinking,
yeah,
if I did that, I was like, on, like, when I'm doing a track session, I'll be buzzing.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, and she did that with 26.
She did 26 and a bit in a row. Like, that's just disgusting. Like, it actually makes me want to heave.
Yeah. And what also makes me want to heave is when you talk to a layman or someone who's not really interested in running, and the only thing that she's remembered for is going to the toilet in a race, and you just think, she's the best marathon runner of any gender in history, and yet, you know, the only memory of her is her failures at various Olympic Games, which just hurts. Yeah.
My question is, what is the funniest chat up someone's tried to hit you up with?
God, too busy running, you see. Don't get it. No.
A goat burp doesn't count, though.
Yeah, that's never a good way forward, is it? That's not a good start. God, that's such a hard question. I'm not really the chat up. I wouldn't even know if I was being chatted up. I'd be like, okay, thanks. God, I can actually, do you want me to tip it on its head? Do you want me to tell you the worst thing I've done in an attempt to impress a boy?
Instead.
Right, so, God, no, this is so embarrassing. I'm not even sure why I've said this. I was back in primary school. Can I just really highlight that?
Mm.
So it was a long time ago. So all these boys out there, I do not do this anymore. So I was trying to impress this boy because I really, really, really wanted to go with him to the Halloween disco, even though it was pretty much in the bag anyway. So it was fine. Year four. But I just wanted to really just seal the deal. So I was the best in my class at doing handstands, and I knew it and wanted to show it off. And as I did this handstand, not only did my summer dress like fall down and reveal these most ugly pants ever, but I also did the loudest fart. And I swear to you, I still have nightmares about it now. I mean, he still took me to the disco, but that was only, I think, because he was a bit scared of me.
100% success rate, that tactic, I think. The farting handstand.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've done it once.
You know, they say, in the animal world, you have to put your scent on them.
I have no idea why I just told you that, but yeah, no, when you said the worst chat line, that was the first thing that went through my head, was that's the worst thing I've ever done trying to impress a boy.
It's a good one. Excellent. Well, thanks very much for talking to us, and we'll have you Bobby. Good luck with your recovery from injury, and hopefully we'll be back seeing you at least on a cross-country circuit at some point in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Making your way back to the very top.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
We'll look forward to that. Excellent.
In the meantime, I'm going to have no boy ever speak to me again.
They just come with their nose pegged or something.
Nice one. Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you.
Cheers. So, great interview there with Bobby. Obviously, lots of learnings we can take away from that. Thinking about our topic, obviously, her example shows how they need to be aware of their bodies and to maybe listen to other people and listen to their family when the situation isn't going as well as it should do. I think also young men and young women, young athletes, have to worry about their health, and that should be paramount. And I think listening to professionals is very important. Do you think you've got any sort of other takeaways you'd have from both our conversation and hers?
Well, I would say, like, you don't know you've done something wrong until you've done it wrong. But the best thing going forward would be listen to loads of different people's opinions. Like, you just refuse to listen to anyone but yourself. Sometimes it turn out bad, obviously, and then you might have problems.
You never know best, almost. Like, well, you do know best.
Much, yeah.
But you've got to listen to, take on everybody else's opinion, or people you expect and trust.
The quote you want is "Love is blind," because we love the sport so much. Yeah. You're blind to see that you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. A nice way to end the podcast there, Jermaine. Nice one. Love is blind when it comes to running. Nice one. Well, hope you have a good couple of weeks, Jermaine. We'll be back on in a couple of weeks. Hope you have more bus antics for us to chat about. And
I try to do my job for the people, but sometimes.
And I will say that we did have a request last week from a listener who also is an editor of a bus magazine, trying to interview you, Jermaine. Do you actually get an interview with that?
Yes, we'll see what happens.
Nice, so we can look out for you on future publications. Yeah. Excellent. Right. See you around, everybody. Cheers.
See ya. Bye. Bye. Bye.